We're giving away two audio DVDs of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. That's almost 8 hours of teaching. Here's how you can win. Find the Issues Etc. podcast at the iTunes store. Click Ratings and Reviews and write a review. Then send the text of your review to contest@issuesetc.org. The two listeners with the best reviews will receive the audio DVD of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We'll announce the winners on Labor Day. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It is something that has, I guess, in the latter half of my lifetime, become something that people simply accept. It either is happening or is going to happen, and we might as well get with the times. When I was a kid, I don't think anyone could have imagined this. A woman serving in the armed forces, actually serving in the capacity of combat. Now, when they started talking about it, people would raise their eyebrows. It was part of a feminist movement. It was part of so-called women's liberation. Well, now, I guess depending on who you ask, it either is or isn't reality in our armed forces. Joining us to talk about women in combat, Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis. He's a West Point graduate. He saw tours in 4 infantry divisions on 3 continents, senior fellow for national security for the Family Research Council. And he's authored the new book, Deadly Consequences, How Cowards Are Pushing Women into Combat. Colonel McGinnis, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me, Todd.
Do we currently have women in combat?
Good question. Once again, it depends upon your definition. We have women flying combatant aircraft. We have women on combatant ships. The issue that I take to task is what was brought up on the 24th of January of this year, and that's when Secretary Panetta and General Dempsey said they were removing all the exemptions for women in ground combat. When I talk about ground combat, I'm talking about the infantry, special ops, where you do the smashing ahead, struggling to the ground in a death fight, shooting at close range, where physical prowess is absolutely essential. And that's where we kill, the point of the spear. And what the commanders have suggested, General Dempsey and Mr. Panetta at the time, is that women ought to be in those positions. And, of course, I say, really, this is a debate between two sides. One side argues this is a question of equality. Women are second-class citizens until they can be at the point of the spear, and they're willing, for public policy purposes, to have some reduction in the fighting capacity of the country in order to accommodate that, because inevitably standards would have to be changed. The other side, where I happen to be, is that men and women are disposed differently. Nature has put them together in ways that men have an advantage physiologically, certainly psychologically, on the battlefield. And the question that I pose in the book, Todd, is what kind of society sends its women into ground combat, the way I've defined it? And then do we want to be that type of society? And I say no, but there are a lot of people that will disagree.
Does it come down to talk about in terms of kind of the diminishment of our capacity to fight effectively? I was somewhere in the social media, one of my shirt-tail relations who serves as a career officer in the Marine Corps came across a picture of some ceremony wherein he found a male and a female cadets, I believe, standing side by side, dressed in male uniforms, Marine Corps uniforms. And I didn't notice it, but he did, of course, because Marines really pay attention to their uniforms. And he said, when we have equality in training and physical requirements and all of those things in the Corps, then maybe we can let women wear a man's uniform. Does it come down to that kind of simple logic?
Well, there's certainly, they do what's called gender norming, and that is that a male will have to do 20 pull-ups, a woman will have to do 3. When it comes down to the physiological differences, you kind of understand women have half the upper body strength of a man, and that's by design because they have about a tenth of the testosterone as does a man naturally, and that's what makes the muscles larger, the cardiovascular system larger, the bones harder and tougher. And of course, anatomically, you know, women are not built like men in terms of ability to carry heavy loads. And so, you know, these are, I think, unrefuted facts that are in the science, just like when we look at the psychological differences in terms of risk-taking and aggression and coping with fear. These are demonstrated by the science. So when you compare a man and a woman in the capacity, whether it's in the Marine Corps or elsewhere, women up to now have not been asked to do the same task. Now, the Marine Corps, under General Amos, the commandant, has put together a program by which he's trying to get some women through the infantry officer course, which is a very tough course. A lot of men don't make it. A lot of them don't even volunteer. And six young women have tried and failed thus far, and there are others that perhaps will in the future. And yet the commandant at this point has said, no, we're not going to change standards. But my concern, Todd, is that the chairman of the Joint Chief, General Dempsey, said back in January that, look, yeah, he wants all the services to look at all these very tough, all-masculine jobs and come to him and argue why either they can't be changed or if they are changed, what detriment that will have on the overall ability to fight. And, of course, I respond to that by saying, one, those standards exist because they're combat demonstrated, combat proven, and we don't have a shortage of young men that can meet those high standards, so why should we accommodate and change, which will ultimately diminish the fighting force of our nation? So, you know, back and forth on this particular issue.
So essentially, the physical standards are in place because it through these time-tested methods, we have discovered that this is what is required of combat soldiers. This kind of thing is what is required of them. So it sounds like there are considerations other than fighting effectiveness behind the push for women increasingly filling those combat roles.
No, it's political correctness. You know, I've trained thousands of combatants, and having been a combatant myself, I understand the physiological and the psychological, you know, really stressful situation that we put our people through. Keep in mind, none of our enemies are going down this pathway. And that's important for us to be instructed by, because they understand that when you get on the field of battle, when you're actually toe-to-toe in the killing zone, you're going to have to use every mechanism you have to survive or to kill the enemy. And unfortunately, where you're going in at a detriment, then, you know, you're going to risk sacrificing the mission and much less losing more people.
Let's respond to some arguments that are commonly made and heard attempt to argue for women in combat. The first one is that we're really talking about a situation analogous with the racial integration of the military.
Yeah, well, back in 1948, when President Truman integrated the forces, you know, transitioning because of the color of your skin, if you were a male, to a integrated force, it just increased the fighting capability of the force. It was terribly inefficient. You know, set aside all the bigotry and so forth, it was terribly inefficient to have separate fighting units, all male. And then when we brought them together, it just made a lot of sense because of the tapping into the physiological and the psychological makeup, which is absolutely identical from one race to another, as long as it's male. And once again, that steroid testosterone makes all the difference, because men of all races and creeds have the same, you know, steroid that is going to pump up their muscles, harden their bones, give them good stamina through stronger hearts, and then they're also going to be able to psychologically fight more often and easier than will young women, and all this is in the science.
Another common argument heard in favor of women in combat really has to do with the fact that all branches of the military are merit-based systems. You advance based upon performance. And the argument is, look, if you exclude women from combat units, that will prevent them from getting the kind of training experience that will help them compete in that merit-based system for advancement.
Yeah, well, a logistician does not compete against an infantryman for promotion. In fact, RAND Corporation put together has looked at this extensively on the promotion rates of young women through the ranks. And women are being promoted at the same rate as are men. You know, it just so happens we only have 15% of women, 204,000 out of the 1.37 million active duty personnel. Women, interestingly, are far more expensive to recruit, about twice as much as a young man. They also attrit faster in basic training. Their numbers drop more quickly. And then even at the officer ranks, first lieutenant, second lieutenant, captain, and so forth, the women tend to leave service earlier than men because of marriage and children and alternative careers. But when you look across the board, as long as the woman sticks in there, she is going to be promoted at the same rate as her male counterpart, and it does not matter the branch that she's in, because she's only competing within her particular branch. I'm talking about if you're a logistician versus an infantryman, and not necessarily if you're a Marine versus an Air Force officer.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about women in combat on this Tuesday afternoon, August the 6th. Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis is our guest, a West Point graduate. He saw tours of four infantry divisions on three continents, senior fellow for national security at the Family Research Council, author of the new book, Deadly Consequences, How Cowards Are Pushing Women into Combat. Give us a call with a question or a comment for the next 15 minutes, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc.
Hey, St. Louis, how would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about women in combat. Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis is our guest. Dale has this question. He listens in Nebraska. He says, my son will turn 18 in the near future, and he's going to register with the Selective Service. Is there any push from the feminist groups to have women register for Selective Service at age 18? Colonel, would you answer the question?
Yeah, I'm afraid, Todd, they will be, because right now, under the Selective Service Act of 1971, that we, of course, only have male-only registration at age 18. However, the reason behind that is because of the Supreme Court decision in 1981, Rosker v. Goldberg, which said because there were laws at the time and a Pentagon policy that precluded women serving as combatants, that they would not overturn the gender exclusion of that particular act. Well, all of that's been wiped away, and it was finally finished by the Obama administration in January. So right now, the playing field constitutionally must be made level unless Congress acts or the president removes his bid to change putting women into ground combat. And of course, then we have to decide, or at least be informed, whether or not the threat and our military and our all-volunteer force is going to be sufficient in future requirements. I will tell you, the world's not safe. It's certainly not any safer than it was before 9/11, and many would argue that with China, you know, radically emerging, Russia returning to its former grandeur to a certain degree, and certainly in the tinderbox of the Middle East and Northern Africa, that we face threats that we haven't seen before and that are going to be significant. And then because of the $17 trillion debt, our military is now, if you've been watching the papers recently, we're going to radically cut by hundreds of thousands of personnel. We're going to cut back benefits, which will really hurt our all-volunteer force and a host of things. So all that comes together, I think that we inevitably, in spite of what Congress wants, may have to return to a draft, and it will include our young daughters, and they will be forced into combat units.
How do you respond to the argument for women in combat that, and again, it's one of kind of those internal questions about women serving in the military, that if they're not allowed to serve in combat, the mission of the military being to fight, that they really are and remain second-class soldiers, second-class service persons?
No, it's the same idea of are you a second-class citizen because you are, let's say, a salesperson, or you're a nurse, or you're a brain surgeon. You look across the country. No, we're all citizens. We all have the same rights and privileges. But there are some people that have skills, and you know, whether they're through training or they're born with those capabilities, that we need to take advantage of. The environment that I'm talking about, the smashing of heads in close ground combat, is a place where you want your most capable people physically and mentally. You know, it's a killing field. And there are a lot of people, male and certainly a lot of females, that are just not suited for that. And we should only want those that have the best opportunity to survive to go into these environments, because our national security depends upon it.
Now, speaking to the issue of the draft, one of the arguments that's made in favor of women in combat is that if you allow women in combat, then you can choose from both genders to address any shortage of military power. And women will be the best solution for that. Your thoughts?
Well, women, you know, have a lot of very unique skill sets. For instance, we've found in Iraq and Afghanistan that they're great negotiators, especially in tense situations. Unfortunately, when we're talking direct ground combat, we don't do a lot of talking when we're out there killing people. We talk before, we talk after, but not in that particular process. You know, women, we have 204,000, as I said earlier. They occupy or can access now 80% of all available positions. We would like to have more young women to come into the armed forces, but they tend to have a lower proclivity to serve in the armed forces. And when a recruiter goes out and talks to a young woman about serving, they're not terribly receptive to the idea, I don't want to go necessarily kill someone. I just want an education. I want benefits. I want to do some traveling. And those are the things that attract young women. Now, they also attract young men, but there are an element of young men that really want to do these rough and tumble things that we desperately need to have a certain element of our armed forces capable and willing to do.
Let's see what Chris has to say. He is listening in Michigan. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, if you're like in a Ranger squadron or special forces, and a woman manages to get into that squadron, the other guys are going to be looking out for her if she can't pull her own weight, and they won't be concentrating on the mission.
Chris, yeah, thank you for listening in Michigan.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, and I chronicle that in Deadly Consequences. You know, and I've seen it myself personally as a combatant. Yes, we will, in many cases, we'll dedicate a person or two men to make sure that this young woman is not harmed. And it's interesting, the Canadians, who you're always hearing that they've got women in combat, well, they won't share any of the statistics in spite of the fact that 300 and so number have gone to Afghanistan. Most of them tend to stay back in the forward operating bases in secure admin jobs. They don't push them out in the front. It's more of a PR thing. Yes, men are hardwired to protect young women. And unfortunately, you know, the feminists who are pushing this from the outside do not understand the environment, and they're willing to sacrifice the few young women that actually might get in there because they see this as a glass ceiling. But there's no glass ceiling. I have no objection to a woman, a four-star general officer, female, being the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. But what I don't want to see is that same woman at an early time at the point of the spear just because she happens to be a woman and doesn't have the requisite strength and the aggression that is critical for success in the battlefield.
Talk about two issues that we haven't addressed yet. One is, as you put it in your book, the destruction of the warrior spirit. What is that, and how does allowing women into combat situations, how is it detrimental to that spirit?
Well, it's a hyper-masculine environment in which there's trust and confidence in one another, and there's not looking out for the woman who happens to be attractive or not attractive to the young man. When we start to minimize that trust and confidence, that hyper-masculine environment, we have seen in the science, once again, that it diminishes the fighting skill and the fighting prowess, the effectiveness. That's critical. And we've seen this over millennia of military operations. And I chronicle a lot of the history in the book, and I talk about the sociology and not just the biology of what's going on here. So it is very important. Some studies have demonstrated that if you, for instance, as the chairman of Joint Chief has suggested, we need a critical mass of young women in a unit in order to have them accepted. Well, as we put number of women in a particular unit, let's say a 100-man infantry unit, and you put, let's say, 10 to 30, depending upon what you consider critical mass, to change that particular dynamic, what are you doing to the strength, the endurance, the fighting power, and, of course, the sexual dynamics? You know, every mom and dad of America who's dealt with teenage girls and boys understands that they notice one another. Well, when you put them in wherever in the world, in the military, they do notice one another, it leads to all sorts of sexual liaisons and issues, very serious issues. The military, if you've been reading the papers, is having a terrible time with unwanted sexual contact, sexual assault, and so forth. Does anyone really believe that by foisting young women into these young organizations that are hyper-masculine, that all of a sudden we're going to solve this sexual assault problem? I think not.
Why do they want it? Why do those, both within the military and in the civilian leadership, why do they want women in combat positions? About 30 seconds here.
Well, it really goes back, Todd, to they see this as a glass ceiling. They say women are second-class citizens unless they can be at the point of the spear. They are willing to sacrifice the fighting effectiveness of our forces. That is, I think, something we should not compromise. Congress must have hearings on this. We need to codify what the military ought to put, who they ought to put in the front lines, and why they have to put, you know, as far as I'm concerned, men that have the requisite physical and psychological preparedness to fight the nation's toughest part of the battle, and that's the ground combat.
Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis is a West Point graduate. He saw tours in four infantry divisions on three continents. He's senior fellow for national security at the Family Research Council, author of the new book, Deadly Consequences, How Cowards Are Pushing Women into Combat. You can check it out at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Colonel McGinnis, thank you for being our guest.
Well, thank you, Todd.
When we come back, it's Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. On this Tuesday afternoon, our pastor's roundtable will be looking at Luke chapter 18, the very famous story of the Pharisee and the tax collector, which is a parable of sorts, but it is a unique one. It's one wherein there's not really one person standing in for another. It's a real-life situation. We'll talk about it with Pastor Dustin Anderson and Pastor Ryan Fairman in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. When you get some time tonight, go to iTunes, to the iTunes store if you would, and look up Issues, Etc. That's where our podcast is often found. Issues, Etc. in their search engine will bring you to the Issues, Etc. podcast. You'll see a tab there called Ratings and Reviews. Click on that. If you have not already, please write a review for iTunes of Issues, Etc. And when you do, if you send the text of that review that you write to contest@issuesetc.org, you will be entered to win one of 2 8-hour audio DVDs of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. If you weren't able to make the conference, you can still hear all of it and a chance to win one of 2 that we're giving away by Labor Day of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Now, go to the iTunes store, find Issues Etc., click Ratings and Reviews and write your review, then send that review to contest@issuesetc.org. We will announce the 2 winners of those 8-hour audio DVDs of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference on Labor Day. I'm Todd Wilkin. Hour 2 of Issues Etc. in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor or a deaconess? Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, invites you to prayerfully consider a weekend event where you attend classes, talk with students and faculty, and worship at Kramer Chapel. Prayerfully Consider is October 10th through the 12th on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary. For more information, call 1-800-481-2155 or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.